You're listening to the Rural Advancement Podcast. Rural Advancement provides resources to empower, equip, and encourage rural pastors and churches. Join our community by visiting us at ruraladvancement.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rural Advancement. This is the podcast that is by rural leaders and for rural leaders. It is our goal every single week, week in and week out, to bring you content that is not just spoken to the rural church, but is spoken by people who get it, people who understand how to live, work, and minister in a small town, and people who understand the immense value of the work that God does there. I'm your host, Joe Epley, and this week I am excited to do an interview of a ministry couple. We have Derek and Gail Owen who are going to be joining us. And I was excited to talk about their journey because one of the things that is a huge passion of mine that we just don't necessarily highlight too often in the interviews is the concept of small town youth ministry. And when I got to familiarize myself with their journey and kind of their background, the theme that kept coming up is they got to go from youth pastors to kind of lead pastors and then really start, or rather continue is a better word, loving youth well from that seat. And so we really get to dive into fun questions like how do you create a church that that is friendly towards teenagers, even as a lead pastor role, and obviously what makes good youth ministry in a small town. And so I'm excited to dive into all of that. But first, I wanted to say, Pastor Derek and Gail, how are you guys doing today?
We are doing great. Thanks so much for inviting us on the show. And it's exciting to talk to people to me that have a passion for rural ministry. And so, Joe, we really appreciate this. It's a beautiful day in New Mexico, and hopefully it is in Montana, too.
Yeah. Small town America is our favorite place. And so today we find ourselves sitting in a big city, envious of those of you that are in small places. So exactly. Wish we were with all of you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I sympathize. I moved from a large place to a small one and back to a large one. And there are days where I'm like, gosh, this is fine, I guess. But, you know, obedience to the Lord is good. But I wouldn't mind if obedience had 10,000 or less people. So,
absolutely.
But yeah, let's do this. Let's start out. And again, either of you can kind of lead off on this first question. But we know that rural is a place of story and history. And so we want to get to know a little bit of yours. And so definitely everything from, you know, where you started in ministry, some of the stops along the way, what you're doing now. We would just love the highlights of the journey and kind of how it connects to small town. So go ahead, guys.
Sure. Well, we both were raised in church. Our families were very involved, very, very involved in church. Both of our fathers were on the church board at times and, you know, served in different various areas of ministry. I grew up, my mom and dad serving as kids pastors and a youth pastors just as in a volunteer role in small churches and small towns. And then in high school, I ended up returning. I actually went on a mission trip with Keith Elder from Montana, actually.
Oh, yes, and, my predecessor in this role.
Yeah. Yep, got saved really on a mission trip with Keith and Marlis Elder in Hawaii, of all places. And it was a great trip. But came home and told my mom and dad we were kind of in a little bit of a dead church. And I told my parents, I said, I've got to have a youth ministry that's really active and vibrant, kids that actually love God and follow him. And so we drove back to the town that we had previously lived about 20 miles, started attending a youth ministry in a church there that we were very involved with previously. And they had a youth group of about 100 students.
Oh, wow.
Very, very, very active, and literally walked in. And one of the first people I met would be my future wife.
Former wife. That's
former
a tough,
wife, yeah.
Tough way to
former
start this
wife.
Conversation.
Yeah.
But yes, future wife, Gail.
Future
that's
wife,
lovely.
Gail. And so we've been, you know, serving along in youth ministry a long time. You know, while we were in high school, we were a big part of everything that was happening and served in various aspects of the church. But then when we got out of school, I was going to be a football coach and went in and went to college to do that and coached for a couple of years. And then and Gail was in a business field and she graduated with a business degree. And so we got married and were doing those things. And God drew us back. He drew us back to the local church. We didn't know what he was doing. He just simply said, quit your jobs and move home. And we took a big leap of faith and moved back home and back to a small town. And it was not long after that, that the youth pastor at the church, that the same church where we met, in fact, He resigned and went to a bigger town, and the pastor just asked us, "Hey, would you guys serve?" And we knew that this was God opening doors, and so we served as the youth pastors of that church for about a year. And it was there were a lot of trials through that situation, but it was God bringing us back into ministry and getting us into ministry really vocationally full time. And about a year of that in that place of service, we got a call from a friend of ours that was pastoring in a very small town, about 5,000 people, hour and a half north of us, and we moved to Tucumcari, New Mexico. And we were there serving as youth pastors under our friend Brian Hurst and his family, and we served that church. That church was pretty small at the time, about 80 to 90 people, but they had revitalized that church basically with youth ministry. They went back into that community, and Brian had previously served that church as the youth pastor, and now he was returning as the lead pastor and had been there for about a year. And brought us on board, and I'm telling you what, man, the youth ministry was probably more active than the rest of the congregation for a while, and it just drew those families right in. And so we went from a town of 35,000 people to a community of about 5,000 people, and we got baptized in small town real fast, smaller town than even we were used to. And Gail and I both grew up in small towns. 12,000 is the town I was from, and Gail was from a town of about 8 or 10,000 people. Yeah. And so she was more acclimated to that. There was a university in the town that I grew up in. And so that a little bit different. There was a lot more culture there. But yeah, we began a journey and a process of ministry in Tucumcari that would end up being 23 years long. We were there 23 years.
Dang.
It was crazy. I still can't believe we were there that long, but we served that church for about a year and a half, almost 2 years as their youth pastors. And then one day our pastors came to us. We hung out with them a lot. It was before we had children. And we hung out with their family all the time. And one night real late, he just simply said, "Now that your defenses are low, let me throw this at you." And he said, "We want to become church planters in Southern California."
Sure.
I said, "Well, that's not for us." And so initially we said no. And eventually we would stay behind and they would go to California and plant a church. But Gail and I stayed behind and we thought our role was literally going to be help this church and congregation bring in their next pastor. So we gave them a notice of a few months. I think it was from May to September. We told them we'd be there through September and help them and receive resumes and help the process. As we did that, we just had person after person apply to come and to not really, it was pretty evident. They didn't want to pastor the community. They wanted to spend time at the lake that was 20 miles away.
Sure.
And to kind of retire, kind of settle into that. And our hearts were breaking because we love these people and we love their kids and we love the school system and the community around them. And we just really felt called to try to bring someone in that would minister to them. Eventually, we'd bring a family in that we thought was perfect. And they went ahead and allowed their name to be voted on. They, did the candidate thing through the weekend and preached on Sunday and preached on Sunday night. And then the church had a meeting and they voted on them. And I'll never forget when they went to the vote, Gail and I and this couple, we all went back to the pastor's office. And we were going to just give the congregation the space they needed. We didn't want to influence anything. And so I just remember them looking at us and he said, "This guy that's just preached, two services and is allowing them to be voted on." He said, "Listen, there's no way that we can take the church." He said, "Because it's been very evident ever since we got here that you guys are the ones that need to pastor this place."
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And we were just blown away because we basically turned that down. The board had asked us several times. I mean, we'd only been involved for like a year and a half vocationally. We didn't feel prepared at all to pastor a church. And so we thought we were youth pastors, And that was our heart and our mission. And then all of a sudden, it became really clear to us, this is what we needed to do. And so that couple was voted in unanimously, I believe. And then they immediately turned that position down.
Oh, wow.
They said to the board that night, they said, you know, I would highly encourage you to ask Derek and Gail to serve in that capacity. And of course the board responded with, well, we have, but they don't feel
sure,
ready.
Sure.
So essentially, Joe, what happened was, is I didn't even have network credentials. I was,
sure.
I didn't have any of the things in place. So I called our network office and asked permission. Our board called the network and asked permission, special permission for me to step into the senior pastor role as not having credentials yet. And we navigated through that process and we became the pastors of the church. We were not only youth pastors then, we were also the lead pastors. And so we would preach and teach on Sundays and lead the congregation. And then midweek we'd have youth services and we were still the same youth pastors we'd always been, but now there's more to do on the weekends.
Yeah. When I think about that journey that Derek just kind of went through, one of the things that comes to mind to me is small town church was our seminary.
Oh yeah.
Now, not just when we were adults, but also when we were teenagers and even younger growing up, we had opportunities in small town church that I'm not sure you get in large or especially mega churches. Sure. We just had so many opportunities. And so as much as we felt unprepared and as much as we were unprepared mm-hmm. to step into our first full-time ministry job, and then certainly our first full-time like lead pastorate, we were unprepared, but we had also had experiences and opportunities and we had carried weight of ministry mm-hmm. that not a lot of young ministers have the opportunity to,
sure.
you know, to do. And so it's one of the things I love about small churches. I think that they are kind of the best ground for us to, you know, find our future leaders in ministry. So
absolutely.
I love small town America and rural churches.
Yes.
Yeah. And thank you guys for sharing that story and that perspective. You know, we've had voices on this podcast, even some who, you know, came from a small church and pastor a small town church, some who came from a small town and pastor a very large church. And
mm-hmm.
and I remember asking one of those individuals, you know, I said, what's the difference? And they said, well, they said, the tough part is in a large church because of just the drive for excellence and the need for that, you know, in terms
yes.
of sustaining the model. You don't have as many ready-made opportunities to just develop people. You know, this individual sure. remembers his first pastoral experience was being like 12, 13, 14 years old and being put in charge of the kids ministry of the church, you know, and he's just like, where else was I going to get an extra 4 or 5 years of exposure to ministry?
Yes.
Even as a teenager, you know? And so I think there's some deep sympathy there, but let's do this. Let's dive into, you know, kind of the first thought here. And this is something that I think is highly important because we recognize that like in a lot of ways, there's a lot of universality to what youth ministry is. You know, we recognize that we should have a love for teenagers, that we should be authentic and real and preach the Bible. Like there's all these things that are real, but you guys are and kind of have floated in this youth ministry world in a rural setting for a long time. What are some of the ways, you know, and you even told me, you know, you got to see your youth group grow and flourish during that time. And so
oh, yeah.
what would you say are some of the unique principles that kind of guide rural youth ministry, the things that just, you know, stand out a little bit even above and beyond other contexts?
Well, I love a small town, the connection with students across the city, because oftentimes school systems and the activities surrounding a school are what the town surrounds themselves with. That's literally the schedule of the city.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, you know, if it's football season or basketball or whatever the case, you know, that's what people are doing because there aren't a lot of other options. But it also brings the community together in a unique way that once we've moved to a bigger city now in Albuquerque, we don't see that at all. And so those are things we miss very much. You know, you just know that on, you know, Friday nights, you're going to the gym or you're going to the field house or whatever the case and the places to go and the things to do. So, you know, I really feel like that it was very, very important for us. We started showing up to the high school. We had an open campus at the high school. which allowed us to show up there. Our youth ministry met on Wednesday nights. So we showed up at the high school with the permission of the school system, obviously, with a van on Wednesday at lunch. We just gathered a bunch of students and we took them to McDonald's and they bought their own meals. And sometimes we'd buy meals for them and we'd pick up kids that couldn't afford their lunch, you know, and just had fun. And we had a great time with them, got to know a lot of students. Many of them would come to our youth group. Some of them would not, but we would end up having a relationship pretty much with the entire school and all the students. We knew all of them pretty well by name. You know, it was just a very unique situation because the school system became a place where initially when we moved to town, we were outsiders. And sometimes in a rural context, it's hard to become one of them. But I found that most rural places allow you in fairly quickly once they know you're real, right?
Sure.
If you're some fake bozo that shows up, you know, that with an agenda, that's different. But if you're there to help and you're there to really pour into the kids, I think they saw that, and it was fairly quickly that we just got a reputation and a connection with the school system that allowed us just a different level of involvement. Mm-hmm. We were welcome on the school campus. We'd go to the school and walk around, talk to teachers. And my focus then wasn't on students. It was on the teacher and, you know, and we just get to know people. And that allowed us to have a communication with people about what's going on in the lives of the students that we didn't have before. We wouldn't have had. Sure. And it was really, really good. The students, what they did is they saw that we were wanting to be a part of their life, mm-hmm. you know, that we weren't just disconnected and showed up where it looked good for us, but we really did want to be a part of their life. And we got to know a lot of their families because we were at the events that they were participating in. And that really developed a model within our community that was just an open door for their entire family to become part of the church, but also sure. just to be familiar with Gail and I outside of the church.
Yeah. I do think that, you know, one of the things that's unique to youth ministry in a rural context is just access. You know, we had easier access, I think, to schools. The schools needed us from time to time. Yeah. We had easier access to families, you know, of our students. And there were several families that were a part of our church for years after their kids first getting involved. And so I do think access is something that's kind of unique to a rural setting. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the other youth ministry things, I don't know that they're so unique to rural settings. Yeah, you sure. know, I mean, you know, staying on mission, you know, don't get just, it's, I think youth ministry is one of the easiest things to get distracted by what's working somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And I have for sure borrowed my fair share of ideas from other people.
Absolutely.
And some of them have worked and some of them didn't work in my context. But man, I think staying on mission is one of the things that we tried to continually just kind of refocus. And then, like Derek had mentioned, get into their world. Mm-hmm. You know, that speaks loud to students.
And into their family. It was amazing. You know, we'd set out to really minister to these students. The next thing you know, dads are walking up to the church door, wanting to have a conversation and something's sure. going on in their life. And man, it was an open door. It really was. It was that for families and also the school system at large. That gave us a platform to be able to really across the city have a voice that was very unique. And over the years, in 23 years, I mean, we really became the pastors of the city. It, one of the hardest things we ever did was leave.
Yeah,
when
we
had to pull out of that town.
It was, like, Lord, I could stay. Like, I would. Just so you know. Like,
it was gut-wrenching.
You don't have to ask me to go do something else.
That's right. That's right. And the uniqueness of a rural setting, you know, when you drive through town, you know, you're waving at everybody. Everybody knows you. You know them. And now, I mean, we've been in the Albuquerque area for a couple of years. I don't know anybody in town, hardly. And, you know, you certainly don't recognize them in the grocery store and the places you go. And so that
you see a truck and you can't pick out which farmer drives the truck anymore, you know?
Exactly. You got it. You got it.
Well, no, that's really solid. And I do agree that like, I really think the one of the most unique aspects is access. And it's, so the question becomes, how do I, as a rural youth pastor, take advantage of the access I am given and kind of steward it well? And so, man, that's a great thought. This next one, man, not to dive into a doozy here, but you and I had shared over the phone, just, you know, kind of one of these experiences in youth ministry that is not desirable by any means, not fun, not exciting at all. And it represents probably one of the harder things for a community, for a pastor, for a student body. And that is like the physical loss of a student. You know, I know in my own context, doing rural youth ministry for almost a decade, we had several deaths of students, you know, from various causes, everything from cancer to dying by suicide to all these different things. And car wrecks, I mean, just rough. And so while I hesitate to switch the tone from one of such triviality, if I'm a small town youth pastor, I know it sounds maybe morbid, but it's not really a matter of if you stay in a long place, like it could be a win thing that something happens, an accident happens, you're going to lose a student. And so, how do you walk through that? How do you walk a community through that? What did you guys kind of practice to get through moments like that?
Well, I'll never forget the morning I was eating at a local cafe with one of our former youth pastors. He had been on staff with us there for 3.5 years and had moved on. And we were eating breakfast one morning and the phone rang, and it was the principal of the high school. And she was crying and she said, "Pastor Derek, can you come to the school? There's been an accident. Have you heard?" And I said, "No." Mm. And she said, "Well, it's," and then she gave me the student's name, and he was a kid in my youth group. Mm. And it takes your breath away, right? It's a 15-year-old, 16-year-old student. And, you know, I grabbed the keys, ran to the school, walked in, and I'll never forget it. When I got on the campus, the students knew, for whatever reason, when they saw me walking through the hall with the somber look on my face, I'm not high-fiving everybody this morning. You know, the word had gotten out, and a student had an accident about midnight the night before, and I hadn't heard about it. And it was just a sobering morning. And the principal walked into the office, and they were in tears. And as a small town does, they grieve the loss of all the students, of course. And she said, "Pastor Derek, thank you so much for coming." She said, I don't know that we can get through this without you. And would you speak to the students?" And I said, "Of course." And I didn't know if she meant one-on-one as I had walked through the hall. And she said, "Well, in 10 minutes, we're going to have an assembly in the high school gym." And she said, "I'm going to give you the microphone and you say whatever you want." She said, "You preach Jesus, you pray for them. You say whatever you need to say to them, but our kids are hurting and they're grieving and they don't know what to do or how to appropriately feel. And would you just comfort and minister to our kids?" And Joe, it's one of those times where the Holy Spirit just has to lead you. You know, you just got to be ready for that. I picked that microphone up. I'll never forget her handing it to me. And she handed me that mic, and I just began to comfort the students and the staff and talk about, you know, talk about this young man. Kyle is his name. He's amazing. And he was an incredible guy. And we just talked and we laughed and we joked and we just did what you do. You tell stories and all the things. And we began a process over the next few days so we set up in the office there, and as students would want to, they would schedule appointments and come by and talk. I don't know how many moms and dads would come in with their students and visit with us. And we weren't trying to allow that. We didn't set out for that to be a moment where the city would be exposed to the ministry of Derek and Gail Owen.
Right, right.
But
you didn't come out with an agenda saying, what an opportunity, obviously.
Oh, yeah, no. But suddenly there was an open door that we had never had in the lives of a lot of people. And as we loved on them and just really cared for them and cried with them. I'm an emotional guy, man. I'll cry. If you start crying right now, Joe, I'll probably cry with you. It's just, you know, that's just part of it. And so as we walked through that event and that week and then the funeral and all the things that were involved, it opened a door for us to minister to the community even further than we ever had. And they saw real people who were also experiencing loss that just loved this kid, you know, and his family.
Yeah.
And we're still very close. I mean, we're connected to that family to this day. That family would go on to have, you know, a couple other kids that would come up through our youth ministry and now are in college. One of them graduated with my son. And so it's just, we've got a connection with them and in the community that was really unique. It was an open door. You know, the old adage of people don't know how much you love them or care until you show it. And they saw it, you know, and they saw the real, and they witnessed that love. So,
unfortunately, you know, that wasn't just one experience, but, you know, that was the first that we remember of many.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, the thing that I remember being, you know, I'm not young now. I was young then. And I remember being so intimidated, being like fearful that these students were going to ask me like theological questions about the afterlife or something that I wasn't going to be able to answer. And just every one of my fears was silenced because, you know, what those kids were looking for, especially their immediate questions, you know, there were far fewer questions and they weren't theological in nature. You know, they were grieving and they just needed somebody to care.
They did.
And so I feel like just time after time, whatever the tragedy looked like, just showing up is so much of the win and it's so much of the ministry. And then, you know, it's not just the day of, but it's kind of the continual, just keep showing up.
Sure.
Just so much of
I think that, and then not showing up to fix it, you know, allow their questions to be the thing that you address and listen to them. And if they just want to tell stories, tell stories. Mm-hmm. And if they have some questions, you know, let's kind of walk through that together and not have an agenda, but just be there for them. And then ultimately always try to point them to the hope that we all have. And that is in Jesus and that they would realize that they would gravitate and hold on to that. That's what's going to get us through is his love and his care for us. And that really helped. We went through, like Gail mentioned, there were several students. The latest one was a 14-year-old student that committed suicide. It was extremely challenging. And, you know, the funeral's held in the high school gym and it's packed out. And what do you say to a community and a family, you know, the situation, all the why questions and those things. And, you know, you just point them to Jesus and point them to hope and hope that they would hold on to something other than the loss that they're experiencing. I would tell a youth pastor or a rural pastor, just be themselves, but show up, you know, show up at the house. I mean, one of the things that we just tended to do in a small town is, you know, we would immediately go to a family's home and be there with them for a few hours. And either one of us would slip out or we'd call some people and we'd try to get some food and some, you know, paper goods to their house because they're suddenly going to have people in their home that more people than they've had in a while or all kinds of practical things, you know, go
sure.
just take care of them, go get a cooler full of drinks or bags of ice or just how can we make some real immediate things just easy for them, you know, to where it's not cumbersome, but it's just ministry and it's practical. It's not theological. Oftentimes it's just serving people. Serve them well. You know, I've mowed people's yards. I've done, you know, I mean, just what can you do to help? You know, that suddenly they have a house full of people they were not expecting.
Sure.
So how can you do that? Can you clean their house up for them? What can you do? And those have been things that have really proven to be beneficial for the family. And that's really what ministry is, right? You know, it's not what we think it is. It's not what we think we need to say necessarily. It's really providing practical and the love that is true.
Yeah, absolutely. Hello, friends. Thanks again for tuning in to Rural Advancement today. We have had the privilege of just hearing the first part of a conversation with Derek and Gail Owen, and we've talked through some of their background. This is kind of part of a two-part conversation on youth ministry in a small town, and just hearing their story of how they've kind of journeyed with this small town for a long period of time, walking through all the ups, but also some of the downs, you know, talking through what happens when you lose a student and things like that. Join us next week because we are going to kind of focus on their role as lead pastors, how they have really carried the heart of youth ministry, even as they've stepped into maybe a more lead role. And so definitely more good lessons to come. But from all of us at Rural Advancement, again, we hope you leave this moment feeling encouraged and empowered and equipped to do what you do in a small place. We know that God values the work that you are doing, and we do as well. As usual, I could direct you to all the formal channels, Spotify, Apple Podcast, or ruraladvancement.com, but true to the rural form, a lot of the way these conversations are going to spread is just from one rural leader looking at another and saying, hey, there's some conversations I'd love for you to be a part of. Once again, I've been your host, Joe Epley, and they have been Pastor Derek and Gail Owen, and we will see you next week. Mm-hmm.